You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, and welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am Grant Goldberg, joined today, as always, by Spike Friedman. Spike, hot off the press. Sleeves are back in Seattle. Byron Maxwell's back. He's wearing 41. He's wearing the sleeves. It's like he's never left.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I'm having trouble matching your pitch on this because he's still replacing the injured Richard Sherman. So the context of the sleeves being back isn't quite thrilling enough for me to get all the way up this morning. But hey. It's better than not having him back. It's better than not having a really good option to bring in and be able to potentially slot into the starting lineup. Although, based on Pete's press conference yesterday, it doesn't sound like that's going to happen immediately. But, yeah, I'm trying to get there. I'm trying to be on your level.
Yeah, there we go. We got to be enthusiastic. It's hard time with some injuries. And we gotta pick it up. We gotta just keep a good attitude. I'm coming in with the enthusiasm. It's what we need these days. It's what we need.
I guess. I'm not sold on that.
I mean, so we'll see. we're gonna stay positive. We're gonna keep it light. We're gonna stay on the topic of jersey numbers, actually. And Luke Wilson yesterday wore a Heath Farwell jersey at practice yesterday. And it's because he had his first ever appearance on kickoff coverage on Thursday. And so he deemed it necessary to wear a Heath Farwell jersey. Heath Farwell's back with the team as a special teams coach. So he thought he was on his level as a special teamer. So he saw it fit to wear the jersey. So welcome back, number 55, Farwell, on the practice field. But come game day, it's 82 Wilson again.
Okay. Yeah, again, not a big Heath Farwell guy. Like, I get that he was the captain for a while, but like the special, who's the other white special teams dude?
Chris Maragos.
Yep, there we go. Who's on Philly now and like had to play safety for them for a minute earlier this year when like they were riddled with injuries. That's funny. It's always funny to me the inversion of what Luke Wilson did when like you've got like that special teams guy and all of a sudden whatever his like position he played in college is suddenly thin, and it's like, oh man, we're playing Chris Maragos in safety. You remember how to do this, buddy? Nope, not at all. Oh boy, I'm just gonna run after the ball. Love those situations.
Right. I always feel like you hope for the best, but you're really never gonna get it. So thankfully we never really had to play Chris Maragos at safety, and so that wasn't a thing for us. So we're gonna go into the secondary right away, and we're gonna get back to Jeremy Lane, and he's gonna be the number one cornerback, it seems, going into Monday night's game against Atlanta, and they're gonna have Shaquille Griffin stay where he's at, and they're gonna wait and see where Maxwell fits into the lineup. Spike, I know you weren't very pleased with Jeremy Lane's play happening on Thursday, but how do you feel about him going into Monday night's game against Atlanta?
Terrified. What are we talking about? He has to guard Julio Jones. Like, of all the matchups to have to play around with that left cornerback, or it's not a good one where a team has, I mean, Sanu and Gabriel are both fine, but like, I'm not worried about a Muhammad Sanu Shaq Griffin matchup. Like, look, I wasn't worried about Will Fuller Shaq Griffin. That didn't go great. But, like, I'm not, like, sweating Sanu versus Griffin. He'll get, what, 4 catches for 48 yards or whatever. Gabriel hasn't been very good this year. And that matchup against Justin Coleman seems like it's bound to end in a bit of a stalemate. They obviously matched up in the Super Bowl last year for a while. That started off in Gabriel's favor and didn't end in Gabriel's favor. But, look, Jeremy Lane was getting beat over the top by the Cardinals receivers, who are very fast, to be fair, but, like, they don't have a quarterback who can hit them in stride. Matt Ryan has the capacity to hit Julio in stride. So I'm terrified. I will say, you know, giving Lane the time off, the time to sort of get his head back on. He was obviously coming into Thursday night cold. He was coming into Thursday night with the emotional sort of whiplash of being traded and then being untraded, being off the team, back on the team, being sort of the rejected guy to being like first man up. So, you know, that's a new dynamic that he had to work through, and that won't be in play. He knows he's starting. He'll be the biggest part of the game plan. I assume we'll be getting him ready to play that spot. So, you know, it's not necessarily the end of the world, but it's not good. How do you feel, Grant?
Well, first, I had a quick question. Would you rather Jeremy Lain match up against Julio Jones or Byron Maxwell?
Well, I think given that as much as Maxwell's coming back into a system, he knows he didn't play under Chris Richard. He played under Dan Quinn.
Right.
So there's some adjustment time. We run a more varied set of concepts now. We mix the man and the cover three more frequently, and so there's time to get up to speed. He also only came in on Monday. You know, throwing him into the fire, he wasn't playing great in Miami. So, yeah, like, it's fine to start Jeremy Lane game one. I just wish game one were against Arizona, so that if he was getting beat a lot, we were like, oh boy, we got to bring in Byron Maxwell. Like, a lot of those passes wouldn't be caught. You know what I mean? Like, the issue is that, like, we're getting thrown into the fire against a team that's really good. Hopefully, Steve Sarkisian, you know, pays a little fealty to his former boss, Pete Carroll, and keeps running the terrible concepts he's been running for the bulk of this season. I guess that's a little firm, and we'll learn more about that in tomorrow's show, but he hasn't been great at exploiting other defenses' biggest weaknesses this year, so hopefully that continues.
Yeah, and I think that something happened this week to help Jeremy Lain get his head right, and we'll touch on that right away after this. Okay, so we're back, and I think something that will help Jeremy Lain, at least mentally going into this week, is kind of his return to the locker room. I read a quote from Jeremy Lain saying, "When I came into the locker room and walked in, I thought it was going to be awkward at first, but as soon as I came in, everybody was like clapping their hands, giving me hugs. It was crazy." So, you know, I don't think that's a very shocking thing. Like, I think you would expect that with the Seattle locker room, but it's nice to have Lain at least feel like he never left and still be a part of the team. And so I think that it'll be good for his head. I think it'll be good mentally to get his head in the game, feel like he's a part of the team again. As far as the matchup between Julio Jones, I don't think it's a favorable matchup for Lain at all. I mean, it helps to have Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor, but at the same time, you know, you're on an island with Julio Jones, and I don't think that's a favorable matchup for a lot of cornerbacks in the NFL, let alone Jeremy Lain, who hasn't been able to stay healthy, hasn't had a lot of playing time, and is a little rusty right now. So it's scary, but I think overall in the game, we have favorable matchups.
I'm just going to say, we have no idea what this game is going to look like because we don't know what the safety position is. It's very possible that we're able to run out Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor, in which case, like, having a mismatch at CB1 is something you can, like, adjust for, and you can run more zone. Even if Julio is good at running those zone beating and breaking routes, you know, they're gonna get some, but they won't destroy us if we've got our first choice safeties in there. We have no idea about Cam Chancellor. It doesn't sound like Pete Carroll has any idea about Cam Chancellor. We're not going to really know about Cam Chancellor until this weekend. And so given that, it's like even scarier to think about, I suppose, is that we just don't know. And it's possible Earl Thomas doesn't play too. He's still coming back from a hamstring. Obviously, everyone's confident he's going to play, and I would be shocked if he didn't. But hamstrings are notoriously tricky injuries to come back from. So I don't know, man. I don't know. You got me. You tried to get me all hyped up with this Maxwell stuff, and now that we're talking, I'm getting all bummed out again. Grant,
all right, Grant. Well, let's see. Let's see if we have anything to kind of pick us back up again. Let's go with Mike Davis being called up to the active roster. Mike Davis, a preseason standout for Seattle.
For those of you who don't know, Mike Davis is a running back. Had some runs with San Francisco last year. We brought him in. He's been on the practice squad because he's a little redundant to our first choice running backs in that he's sort of first second down back. He's good, but he, you know, at this point you're down enough guys. You got to bring him up. Right. And he's up, baby.
Yep, he's up. He had some good runs. He's a bit of a bruising back. He's not very tall, but he's bulky. Yeah, he can catch the ball a little bit out of the backfield, but I think the main issue for him last year in San Francisco was being able to hold on to the ball. I don't think it's an ideal situation if you have to bring up a practice squad running back and they immediately turn over the ball, but I'd like to think that's something he worked on. I don't think that he fumbled in the preseason. I could be wrong. But if memory serves me correct, he didn't lose the ball. So hopefully, you know, this goes as a dream scenario. He comes in, rushes for 100 yards, catches for, you know, 30, and we win comfortably. But, you know, that's not likely to happen because this is the NFL and dreams are far-fetched. Spike.
What was that? What was that? I thought we were on an upward trajectory, and now...
I was just going to ask you to pick me back up. I need you to pick me back up, Spike. I started to, you know...
Man, you know that the only thing I've got is a bummer, which is that with CJ ProSice on the IR, and this is something I believe Bob Condotta tweeted yesterday, we are down to four active members of last year's draft class, and those are Jermaine Fetti, Jaron Reed, who has a hamstring injury and will likely miss this week, Nick Vannett, who hasn't made a huge impact, and Quentin Jefferson, who we've already cut and re-signed, which is to say, like, Seahawks haven't drafted well recently.
Yep.
And it's a trend. And you go back one more year, and we're down to only three guys on the roster, and it's Frank Clark, Tyler Lockett, and Mark Lewinsky, who has not covered himself in glory. And the year before that, all we've got left is Justin Britt and Paul Richardson. And the year before that, all we've got left is Luke Wilson. So since that incredible draft class with Irvin, Wagner, Wilson, and Lane, you've got sort of four classes out of which we've got, I'd say maybe the best players are Frank Clark, Justin Britt, and Jaron Reed. And like, those are good players, but none of those guys are all very good. But none of those guys are game-breakingly good. When you look at the previous few drafts, you have Bobby Wagner, Russell Wilson, KJ Wright, Richard Sherman, Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor. Those are all transcendent, game-changing players. And the fact that we haven't gotten those recently is a little scary. And I think the reason that we're talking so much about injuries is related to that, which is that this team is relying on guys on their second contract. The NFL is brutal, and at a certain point, you can't rely on older guys, and old means 30. Old doesn't mean what it means in other sports. So that's all bad news, which is that the malignancy at the heart of this roster is a couple really bad draft classes, but like 4 years of just okay drafting. There are two good pieces of news. The first good piece of news is John Schneider, despite having a sort of fallow run of getting all-star draft picks, has done a pretty incredible job of replacing injured players through trades and free agent signings. Like, we have the Maxwell signing, and that's incredible in its way. You have Sheldon Richardson coming in for Malik McDowell earlier this year. You've got the ability to bring in Dwayne Brown, which is, you know, wild that they were able to fit him in under the cap.
We thought that was a long shot before it happened. I didn't think it was going to happen at all. So
yeah, we were like joking around about it because it just seemed like it would be like fun if it happened, but then it like actually real life happened, which is pretty great. And then bringing in Dwight Freeney to replace Cliff Avril. You know, we've managed to, with four really good players going down, replace them make the drop off for their replacement pretty small through some really difficult roster maneuvering. So credit to John Schneider for that. Also credit to John Schneider for this most recent draft class. Shaq Griffin looks like a very good cornerback. He's not Richard Sherman yet, but he's probably the second best corner to come into this system. And that includes some really good guys, including Maxwell. Nas Jones already looks like a steal in the third round and looks like an impact player at one and three technique. Ethan Posick looks like the best offensive line the team has drafted since Justin Britt. Amara Darbo is getting decent snaps, and while that doesn't seem like a great thing, you look at some of the other wide receivers that the team has taken in middle rounds. You know, the guys they've taken high, Richardson and Lockett, have worked out, but you look at the guys they've taken a little lower, like in the range where we took Darbo,
like a Kevin Norwood.
Bad.
I was optimistic throughout his whole tenure in Seattle, and it never paid off. It never paid off, Spike.
Yeah, and then you've got Chris Carson and Malik McDowell, who are both injured right now, but there's no reason to think that they won't have an impact on the team going forward into either the end of this year or next year. So that is a really good draft class. And really good draft classes are what keep a team at the top, or honestly can instantly bring a team back up to the top. I mean, this class is nowhere near what's happening in New Orleans, but you look at what's happening in New Orleans, and oh my God, like they went from being the worst defense in the history of football to, you know, the 12th best defense in the league, while also turning their running game from league average into the second best unit in the league, while also keeping Drew Brees around, all in one draft class with Kamara and Marshawn Lattimore and that other safety they've got. I think they've got Ryan Ramczyk. They got like five or six starters from this draft. So I don't know, like, it's both a thing that's like a malignancy in the roster, but it's something that's already improving. It's something that Schneider has been able to deal with in a way that is staggeringly impressive, and it's something that can always rebound. So I don't know. That's just like a long spiel on sort of like what the CJ Procise injury looks like fitting into the bigger picture, which to me is mostly bad, but is turning good because John Schneider has the will of a warrior, Grant. He's got the will of a warrior. You back up, baby. You back up. You back excited.
I'm dealing with some sound issues. I've been muted for a long time. It's Wednesday morning. We're dealing with the same stuff.
All right. Well, we're gonna take a quick break. We will be right back with some more Grant Goldberg gardening sounds and also some Seahawks analysis right after this.
All right, we're back, and let's keep it fun. Let's keep it lighthearted. We're scrolling Twitter this morning, and Odell Beckham tweets at Richard Sherman, says, "Brother, what's up with the one-on-ones right now? I think I could get you a few times, but real talk, I'm praying for you, though, for a healthy, speedy recovery, and whenever it's time, we can get some work. Get right, fam, love." And then Richard Sherman responds, "IR battle, huh? LMAO, I appreciate you, bro. We will get together for sure." And so it's just fun to see some back and forth like that. And in my head, I'm thinking of an IR battle, like, does, like, Cliff Averill talk to George Fant about, like, anything? Like, oh, like, I'm gonna get you, like, when we're back. And so, Spike, what is a dream IR battle with this Seahawks team and the injuries that have hit them?
Well, I will say this is a bit of actual news, that when Mike Davis got the call that he was getting put on the active roster from the practice squad, he was in the middle of a Call of Duty game with Richard Sherman. And apparently Mike Davis owns Richard Sherman at Call of Duty and might be the best Call of Duty player in the whole Seahawks. So, you know, there's that. When I think about great IR battles, you know, you got to think about something that allows for a certain level of competition. So, like, on the one hand, like, I'm thinking, like, between Beckham and Sherman, I'd like to see some foosball. But, like, a guy like Cliff Averill can't really come into that because he's got that stinger, which I assume is affecting his grip strength. And so for a guy like Averill, like, you know, he can go out there and do pretty much anything that involves running around, which Sherman can't do. So you've got to match up the IR battles correctly. So yeah, I think you're right that like Fant and Averill, though, like what is a good battle where you both don't need full feeling in your hand, but you also don't need your ACL? It's not much. I guess it could be Jeopardy. You know what I mean?
Jeopardy. Like you watch an episode of Brain Games and like see who like gets like their riddle done faster, like who actually gets it and who doesn't.
Yeah.
I think you have to be really creative with that. I don't think that there's many activities that requires no grip strength and no running.
You could do human wheelbarrows where Averill's the one running and then Fant's on his hands. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you're gripping the leg, maybe you turn
Yeah.
It's a tough task to come up with activities for injured Seahawks. But I think maybe Call of Duty works in that situation. You don't need a ton of grip strength for a controller, and you can talk crap between each other. You don't need your leg for that. So maybe Call of Duty or video games.
I don't know. Cliff Averill doesn't strike me as a gamer. Like the fact that Sherman and Mike Davis play games makes sense to me. I can't really see Cliff Averill just like sitting around playing games. Or if he does play games, I feel like he's more of a Zelda guy than like a Call of Duty guy.
Maybe like a full quest, like a journey type of game.
Skyrim.
Of like a, yeah, I could see that. I could see Cliff Averill riding a dragon and going over the land. I don't know. I think that Cliff Averill, if he plays a game, he's gonna want to conquer some stuff and build some houses in the game. So maybe he likes Minecraft. Exactly. Who knows?
I was going to go with Civilization, but Minecraft is a great point.
Yeah, it's the most prominent thing. It's more my speed, being the young guy I am.
Oh my God, you're so young. Oh,
all right. speaking of a young team, the Los Angeles Rams come into a game where they play the Minnesota Vikings this week. And you know what, Spike? It's a Case Keenum revenge game.
I love this. So because the Seahawks are playing on Monday night, we've got a great fun Falcons talk episode coming up tomorrow. We're going to do our actual game preview on Monday, but in case you're thinking about what you need to watch this week and what you need to be thinking about the Sunday games, looking at this Minnesota Rams game, there couldn't be more implications for the Seahawks. You have 2-7-2 NFC teams going up against each other. And the Rams, you have our division leader, a team that looks really good right now. They've been beating bad teams big, which, as we've seen in Seahawks history, is indicative of a team that is for real. Like, I don't think there's anything cheap about what the Rams are doing, but they've been beating bad teams. They've been shredding the Giants' defense as the Giants are actively in revolt against their head coach. It's not great. But when they're playing a team like Minnesota that has as much talent on the defensive side of the ball as any team in the NFL, including the Seahawks, like, it's going to be a challenge for the Rams. And what we've seen from the Rams is they're really good at using misdirection to create opportunities to get their best players to be able to make plays. And we saw that against the Seahawks. And the Seahawks made enough plays to counter that, turning the ball over a bunch. But if it weren't for those turnovers, Seahawks would have lost to the Rams. You look at that Todd Gurley near touchdown that becomes a fumble because of Earl Thomas. You look at some of those early drives where the Rams were rolling, sort of pulling out the whole playbook. When they ran out of plays, the Seahawks were able to get to them. And so the question is, who is going to make more plays on that side of the ball? The Vikings are the sort of team that can beat the Rams beat that Rams offense, stay really, solid and consistent, which is what you need to do. You need to have gap integrity. You need to do all the little things that involve not losing your man while they're running like Robert Woods on like weird U-shaped routes and getting him wide open for touchdowns in ways that should be illegal. And so the Vikings can win on that side of the ball, but the Rams defense, it's on the rise, Grant. It's back up. They've got Aaron Donald working well in Wade Phillips' system. They don't have any injuries, which is deeply infuriating given how many injuries the Seahawks have. The Rams have just Robert Quinn and like one offensive lineman injured on the whole team. It's crazy. So they're in a really good position to be able to take it to a really good Minnesota offense. But the Minnesota offensive line that was so terrible last year is incredible. Case Keenum's been sacked like four times all year. So you've got strength against strength on both sides of the ball. We obviously, a Rams loss is good because it puts the Seahawks in the catbird seat in the NFC West if we can get by the Falcons, which we're going to need to do. But Vikings are 7-2 also, and they're really good. The implications are high. It's strength against strength. It's a lot of good stuff. It's thrilling. I'm excited. Are you excited, Grant? Did I get you excited about watching a game that is not involving the Seahawks? Okay, good.
Yeah, it's going to give me something to do on a Sunday. But I think that if the Vikings want to win, they're going to have to make the Rams one-dimensional, and they're going to have to make the Rams just lean heavily on Todd Gurley. I think that their pass defense is stellar. I think I read a stat this morning, and the Vikings have allowed 4 passing TDs in 7 weeks. And so when you're going up against a quarterback like Jared Goff, who needs a lot of time and really to go through all his reads, and he's still developing for as much of a step up as he's taken in year 2, he's still developing and he's still raw at times. So the Vikings really have to shut down the passing game and really make the Rams one-dimensional with Todd Gurley in order to kind of keep it low scoring and make it a game where you can have a lot of drives. So there's more opportunity for an offense led by Case Keenum to put points on the board.
Yeah, and it's easy to be like Case Keenum. It's easy to think about what he did under Jeff Fisher.
Right.
But you've got the weapons around him are so good. Stephon Diggs and Adam Thielen are really good. Kyle Rudolph is playing really well. It's a trio of weapons that evokes like, and it's weird, and maybe this is the wrong thing, but like to me it evokes like the Patriots in that Thielen is that like Julian Edelman type. Yeah, he's bigger.
What a shocking
exactly.
Comparison.
I know. I hated myself as I was saying it because he's also bigger than those guys, but he is that type of route runner. Stephon Diggs can take the top off of defense. He's also a really good route runner. Exactly. Those are both steals. I mean, they like it's crazy. I think I was listening to some podcast on this. It was maybe the Ringer NFL show where they mentioned that the Vikings are doing this with basically no upper round offensive picks. Like all of their first round picks on offense, whether it's Matt Khalil, the pick they traded to get Bradford, Laquan Treadwell, none of those guys are making an impact. Everyone making an impact on that offensive side of the ball is someone they picked up off the scrap heap or someone they took in a later round, which is just so impressive. It's just so impressive what's happening in Minnesota. And they're winning big too. They look really legit. And again, and this is the note I really want to hammer home, is we live in a world where Jared Goff and Case Keenum are both playing like top 10 quarterbacks, and Jeff Fisher had both of them last year, and that Rams offense was genuinely unwatchable. And I'm like a very much an anti-incarceration person generally in my life. Like I think we have too many people in jail in America. But Jeff Fisher should be in jail. Like, Jeff Fisher was so terrible last year. It just makes me, like, furious to think about. And that's his arrival. That's his someone who benefited from his terribleness in theory. In practice, obviously, they manifested their terribleness right on top of the Seahawks all the time. But, like, God, I hate Jeff Fisher. I hate him in, like, a visceral, angry, disgusting way that I'm not proud of.
Like, and it was painfully obvious, like, what was wrong with Jeff Fisher and the Rams, but if you needed more evidence, like, why he was just terrible, like, look at Jared Goff and Case Keenum. And credit to Sean McVay, too, for Goff's development, but I think even bigger than that was just getting Jeff Fisher the hell out of Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yeah. Get him back to Montana. Get him
there up you with go. The Sit in your truck drinking some beers. You know, I think being fired allows Jeff Fisher to live his best life.
Yeah, but he doesn't deserve to live his best life. He should be haunted by his failures.
I think he is. I'd like to think that he is, That's why he's sitting in a gas station parking lot in his truck drinking some beers. But who knows? Who knows what's going on inside Jeff Fisher's mind?
I just don't want it to be like, yeah, I made it. So happy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want him to be happy.
Right, exactly.
I want Jeff Fisher to be sad.
There we go. And if Jeff Fisher's sad, that means we're all happy. And so, usually you don't benefit off someone's sadness, but in this case, there's an exception. And I think that does it for the show today. You can go on iTunes, leave that 5-star review, and leave your Twitter handle in it. Maybe talk about how Jeff Fisher being sad makes you happy. Who knows? But if you do that, you're entered to win a Pro Football Focus Edge membership, which gives you that knowledge. It gives you the numbers. And, yeah, you can correct us when we're wrong on the show. It gives you a lot of power.
Yeah, please correct us when we're wrong on the show using Pro Football Focus Edge. Do it. Why not? Why not? Why not just get mad at me all the time?
So I am mad at Spike more often than not.
Because, is that true, Grant?
Because he's so smart, and it makes everybody feel less smart. And so sometimes, Grant, I have to you know, reel Spike in, tell him to dumb it down.
And that's again, you know, I didn't get into all the stats about why Jeff Fisher should be in jail, but I've got him. So
they're ready to go.
They are ready to go. So if it comes up again, know that I've got more in the back pocket.
All right. So for Locked On Seahawks, I'm Grant Goldberg.
And I'm Spike Friedman, locking on Jeff Fisher.